Hello and welcome to the Get Into Grips With podcast, where I, the host Tom Watson, aims to inspire humans to lead happier, healthier and better connected lives. At Project Get A Grip, we want every human being to continuously grow and prosper as they traverse through the ever-changing terrain of life and strive to build the best versions of themselves. By delving into the journeys and lives of others, these in-depth conversations seek to inspire you to question your beliefs, overcome fears, and take positive action to better connect mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and ultimately live a purpose-driven life in which you can flourish and thrive. For episode 19, I was joined by Ben Coomber. Ben is one of the UK's most well-respected nutritionist, coach, and educator in the health and fitness industry. With years of experience under his belt, Ben is also an author, global speaker, business owner, writer for some of the major UK magazines, father, husband, and all-round top bloke. Not to mention, he also runs a number one rated health and fitness podcast with almost 550 guests having been on the other end of the microphone. We delve into so much, from keeping nutrition simple, gyms reopening, and the importance of systems, as well as finding balance, flow state, and how to say no. I loved how Ben opened up and shared how he utilizes a therapist, not because there's a specific problem in his life right now, but how he just wants to grow as a human being and understand himself a little better. I hope you enjoy it. This is episode 19. So I feel slightly embarrassed that you're on 549 and I'm on 19. So I need to up my game. You're on Monday and Thursday? Is that it? And you've been doing this 6 years, 6 or 7 years?
Seven and a half, I think.
So I listened to your episode with Chris Williamson, or Chris Williamson, on Modern Wisdom, and he's killing it. He's got a great podcast. And it was the alcohol one. And the biggest takeaway for me on that, I loved it, was more time, more money, and more calories to spend on things that mean the most to you. And I like that from him, man. Like, it was interesting to listen to your drinking habits or your relationship with alcohol. And it got me questioning my relationship, because I've been drinking more with like dinner and meals. So what was the biggest takeaway for you for that episode? And what one bit of advice would you give listeners who are coming out of lockdown and maybe want to change their drinking habits?
So in the personal development space, I always have this perspective that, I suppose I have this evolved perspective that change something if you feel it is negatively impacting you, or you feel there is a potential perceived upside and you're willing to put in the effort to receive the, you know, the perceived upside. So like with Chris's perspective, he's gained massive amounts of upside. But like with my life, with my drinking, with my behavior, with my social life, all that stuff, I can't find an upside. I've played around with it. Like if you said to me, Ben, I challenge you not to drink for a fortnight, I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. Mm. Like, honestly, it's no big deal, but I will resent it a little bit because I really like a beer. So for me, it's not a problem. Like alcohol is not a problem. It's an enjoyable part of my lifestyle. So if I can't see a perceived upside, then what's the point of me putting in the effort? And you could stand there and you could say, well, you might save 40 quid a month for not drinking. I'm like, that doesn't bother me. I'm happy to spend 40 quid a month on my drinking. That's not a problem. And this is where I think people get themselves in a pickle with health and fitness and self-development. It's like there's always this pressure to be doing stuff, doing more, progressing. And sometimes you need to not focus on progression in fitness, because obviously progression takes effort, takes time, takes focus, takes energy. Sometimes you don't want to progress in your fitness because actually you want to go and progress in your relationship or your financial life or your career life. Like there might be a period in your time where you're like, actually, I'm really going to knuckle down in my job. Like I've got a real good promotion on the horizon. Like I really want to go for it. So actually I'm only going to go to the gym like 3 times a week instead of 5 and put more energy into my work. Like that's not necessarily a negative thing. And people will perceive it as negative because you're doing more work and less fitness. But ultimately, as long as you're still happy, healthy, and you're progressing in some area of your life, then you're going to grow as a person. And I just think sometimes people get kind of overly bombarded with all of these influencers that have all the time, money, and energy to basically spend every day fucking foam rolling and food prepping and literally, and this, you know, this are quite often like single or, you know, whatever. And it's like, you do have to look at the luxury of time there. Like, I'm a new dad and I think I've got my shit together, but it's definitely tougher with time. And I work from home and, you know, there's more variables there. So I think at the moment I'm very passionate about people just understanding what it is they actually want to progress in and not feeling that external pressure to be like, I must be squatting heavier, or I must be running faster. It's like, you actually don't have to. You can actually just say, I want to go out for a run because I just want to enjoy and go out for a run and stay fit. That's a perfectly good reason to go for a run.
Mate, that's awesome. I mean, for me, like, I very much come to the realization that, and I said awesome because I see it on your top. I love it. We're going to get onto that in a bit. For me, like, I'm just constantly on this mission to strive for balance and have bursts of energy on new goals. And it's, for me, I see it as like, on the cooker hobs, like sometimes you'll turn the gas up and you've got to turn it down on some things, but there's so many temptations and there's so much flow of traffic on social media. And we all think we should be doing like mobility work every day. We've got to be foam rolling, then we've got to be meditating. I find it really hard to fixate on what to improve on, because I think like the personal development and morning routine stuff, we can really self-obsess about that stuff. How do we find balance in life?
So obviously balance would be different for everyone. Balance for you is different. Balance for me. I am a big fan of just reflection, introspection, you know, spending time saying, okay, these things I did today. So let's look at my day in like hourly chunks. Did all of these hourly chunks serve me? Did I get something back from it? Did I become fulfilled? Was my work productive? Like, just ask these questions. And as soon as you're seeing a pattern of like, no, actually I did that thing and I'm lying here thinking, why did I do that thing? I didn't actually get any benefit from it. Then you've got to try and just be honest with yourself and say, well, am I willing to change that? Should I change that? Do I want to change that? Could I fill that time with something else? Because the problem is we get caught in habit loops. You know, exercise is a great example of getting caught in a habit loop. For years, I got caught in the habit of, you know, going to the gym 5 days a week, like Monday to Friday in the gym every day, especially at like when I was younger, it was like 4 p.m. I was doing my workout. Then I got to a point where I was like, I don't want to work out today. I was like, no, I need to go to the gym. Like, it's in my habits, in my head. Like, if I don't go to the gym, like, will I lose stuff? So this is where you have to spend time being introspective. This is where you have to get in touch with data a little bit more, be more logical, be less emotional. A problem that stays emotional will generally stay a problem for a lot of people, because if you don't stand back and just think logically, then you're not going to get perspective. That's why I'm a big fan of journaling and recommending journaling. Like, write your thoughts down. It's the simplest, fastest way of self-therapy. And everyone looks at journaling as like this massive time intensive task. Trust me, you will spend 10 times more energy leaving that emotion, that problem in your brain, like a bouncy ball in a box, than you will just spending 5 minutes opening your journal and writing shit down. And it is just the easiest way to go, that's silly. Why am I worrying about that? Just fix it. It just makes you be more rational by writing things down. So in terms of achieving balance, it, you know, people have to appreciate that it constantly changes as well. Like, my balance now, being a dad in my 14th week of being a dad, is actually quite different from being in my fourth week, just because of how I can balance things, the things that I'm looking to do. So as long as we're spending time just allowing ourselves to be flexible and change our balance, like, it's not a fixed thing, then I think we'll know the answer. But so many people will look externally for an answer. Like, people will message me on social media and be like, Ben, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? You've literally just written the answer to me. It's there in your message. Yeah. But people want confirmation. They don't trust themselves. And I'm like, trust yourself by doing it and then reflecting on it and seeing like, oh, I thought that thing and I did that thing and that thing happened positively. And I think because we're so attached to technology and you can get the answer in an instant, you can message Ben Coomber in an instant, you can, you know, message anyone, we've lost that habit of just standing back and going, take a breath, My nutrition's in a bit of trouble here. Can I improve it? Do I know some answers? Could I stop taking that chocolate biscuit to work in my packed lunch? Could I make some time at the weekend to plan and food prep? Could I fill up a 2-liter bottle and take it to work? Like, we actually know absolutely loads of answers. We've just got into this habit of like, oh, I'll Google a diet plan, or I'll ask Ben, or whatever. And for me, that's not a good habit to get into. It's not you developing a critical life skill, which is you deconstructing how your life is going and just spending a bit of time planning and reconstructing it.
Self-inquiry. And I love this term. So fixated on working out, but what about working in? That's how I'm learning and growing myself. You mentioned journaling. I use the 6-minute diary. Dude, it's so good. I don't know if you heard about it. 3 things you're grateful for in the morning. Why today's going to be great. A positive affirmation. And then you've got a 3-minute. So that's a 3-minute section. And you've got a 3-minute checkout in the evening of what went well today. How could I improve? And then 3 positive experiences. Do that every day, man. At the end, there's like a weekly review. And I think that weekly review is really important because that helps you make those necessary tweaks. So we're not in autopilot. So that might be a takeaway for you. 6-minute diary. It's on Amazon. How do you go about your journaling? Because I know that some people like doing long form or like morning pages.
So the fit, the fixed type of journaling that you just recommended, where you've got the book, I've got a couple of those books on my bookshelf. I personally think they're quite good for more beginner intermediate, where you almost need some guidance on how to reflect and how to just go inwards. And then I think over time, I'd like to see people actually curate that for themselves and actually go on that journey with their own thoughts and have no fixed start or end point. And, you know, just start with like, how do I feel? What's frustrating me? So for me, usually starts with the frustration, because they're the things that I usually want to solve. Like, I'm not writing to just continually be grateful. Like, I think that should be a practice skill over time. You should learn how to be grateful about your life over time by just spending time with yourself. So I usually start off with something negative, and then I turn it into a positive, and then I kind of end on something grateful. So ultimately, use whatever technique works for you, but I want people to develop the skill where they're able to self-inquire. And they don't need like someone saying, write down what you're grateful for, which is fine. We all need structure. It's like nutrition. People ask me for a plan. I give them a plan. And then over time, I teach them how to be autonomous with their nutrition plan. So they know how to be flexible. They know how to go out and eat dinner. And I think it's the same kind of perspective.
Man, I love that. It's about learning yourself and not having to be told all the time, kind of what you said in the first, you know, before we got onto this topic. And I guess it's the same with like meditation apps. Like, you feel like you're obliged to sit down, put the timer on for 10 minutes, and you like tick a box of like, okay, I meditated today. But you can actually meditate by being present with your friends and family, being 50% less reactive. And that might be a byproduct of those hours you put in. But I feel like there can just be like, okay, journaled, I meditated. There's always like a tick box, and trying to get into more of a flow state with personal development, I think, is quite important. So yeah, man, that's really helpful. Like, that's something that I want to get better at, is journaling and writing more long form. I really don't like writing. Like, I want to start writing blog posts and getting more of my written form out. Like, I like this kind of media. So that's something I'm going to try, man. Some like more long form journaling. So
I think getting in a flow state, what you said is amazing. The problem people have, in my experience as a coach, is we leave it just a little bit too late. Just becomes a bit of a problem. It's like getting a pain in your knee. Like, well, did you actually kind of feel that your hamstring was tight last week, or your quad was tight, or whatever was tight? And now that's become even more of a problem. And now you've got knee pain. Like, we leave it till it's like broken. So I think we need to develop skills where we kind of see the early warning signs, and we're like, okay, I need to step back here. It's like, you know, loads of people go on holiday when they're like burnt out. You know, they're like, fuck, I need a break. And it happened to me like a little while ago. And I was being too strong. I wasn't being honest with my emotions, and I fucking had a mini breakdown. Like, 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I literally turned up one day, said to my team, I'm taking a week off, I've cleared my diary, literally see you later. I just walked away and my team just picked up the pieces and carried on, thank God. I left it too late though. I wasn't being honest with myself. I wasn't listening to the warning signs. I was trying to be a brave soldier for my wife and, you know, for our new daughter and stuff. And I think that's the challenge of people trusting themselves and being honest with themselves and seeing the early signs, and we're not having to backtrack so far. And like you say, it's like, you know, I don't need to meditate every day. Like, I don't need to read every day. I don't need to do X every day, but I need to know when that day is so I can just, you know, keep those checks and balances and try and keep in that flow state. People online project that it is this thing that when you get your morning routine right, your day's always going to go well. It's
bullshit. You're crushing it. The guarantee, yeah. Like, if you ain't getting up at 5:30 a.m., you're losing at life.
Yeah, it's bullshit. Like, twice a week, I'll get up at 3:30 in the morning and I'll crush work. I'll do loads of stuff. But the other days of the week, I'm not getting up till like 5 or whatever. I'm sleeping in, have a morning with my daughter. Like, and it just flows. And I think people just need to find their own place with that. Of course, it just depends where you are in your life. When I was in my mid-20s, I was all about routine. I was up at 5 in the morning. You know, I got up, I did all my food. I went into this like incubator center where I was building my business. Then I went to uni. Then I went to, and I had a really fixed routine because I had the opportunity. I wanted to really force myself. I wanted to grow. So in a nutshell, people just need to use these skills at the right time, start to trust themselves, build confidence. And as you say, you only really develop these skills by spending time working in rather than out all the time and, you know, just getting caught in this burnt out cycle.
And it's good that you got that self-awareness, man, because you are, I hate the word busy, but you are, what's another word for busy? I don't want to say stretched thin, but you've got a lot going on, man. You're a speaker, an author, you've got your coaching academy, the diet stuff. You've got a lot going on. And I'm interested, and I picked up on what you said earlier about the time blocks and the hour slots. I listened to a really interesting podcast and they were saying the more responsibility and things you take on, it gets to almost decision-making. So someone like the Prime Minister of Donald Trump, they'll have like 2 to 3 minute slots where people are just coming in throughout the day and they're just making decisions. Like, you've got 2 minutes of my time. I'm that important. I'm that busy. It's yes or no. And if you're not prepared, you go to the bottom of the pile. And it seems like with more responsibility and more projects we take on, do we run the risk of burning out if we're not smart with our time and have things like routine and structure?
I think you run the issue of burning out if you don't create systems and processes. Like, if you're building a business, if you elevate above a job, you have to bring someone in or put a process in place or a bit of software in place to do that job for you. Otherwise, you just accumulate things and work 14 hours a day, become stressed, pissed off, and hate what you've created. So I run 3 companies. You're right, I do lots of different things. I podcast, but like my social media, my marketing, 4 people run it. Our distribution, our supply chain, our ordering, 2 people run it. Our customer services, 2 people run it. You know, our web design, I've got someone on like 20 hours a week. We're constantly doing stuff. So, you know, I'm kind of almost in between a Donald Trump and a solopreneur, is that I'm probably making 10 to 15 like key business decisions every day, quick messages, quick phone calls. But then other times I'm sat down, I'm doing deep work, I'm doing writing, I'm doing podcasting. So, and that's where most businesses don't scale. Like, we don't scale as people because we don't create those systems and those processes that are really clear where someone else who's equally as great as you are can come in and pick up and do an amazing job.
I love it, man. We fall to the level of our systems.
Pretty much. It's the same with our life. Mm. Like, if you don't have a system for your nutrition or your training, it's easily broken, right? Like, my system for my nutrition is I sit down, I identify with my wife what we want to eat that week, evening meals, lunches, all that stuff. We put the order in, especially as lockdown, we're all doing like home delivery, click and collect, that kind of thing. And the food gets delivered and it's there in the fridge. I make it, we've got a system. And that system allows me to eat well, eat in a timely manner and be well nourished. My training, I've got a commitment to 3 training sessions a week. I've got a training gym in my garage. I've got a system. It's very flexible, but I've got a system. So everything is about life systems. It's about habits. It's about, you know, routines, knowing yourself. And then it kind of becomes easy. Like when people say to me, oh, how do you stay motivated with your nutrition? It's almost a question. Like, it's a big part of me is like, I don't get that question. But it's because I'm so invested in my health. Like, I don't get how you wouldn't want to sit down and go, I want to eat pretty well this week. I want to nourish myself. I want to have a healthy weight. I want to be energized. So I'm going to plan my food. So the motivation like never disappears. The only time I get sort of almost low motivation to eat well is probably only really when I'm really underslept. And most people would be the same. You're really underslept and you're just craving sugar, shitty food, alcohol, but it's because you're tired. And that's what your brain does. Your brain basically tells you to have a pick-me-up all the time. So as long as that life system is in check, which is my sleep, then my nutrition generally takes care of itself because I have a system there to make sure I eat well all the time. So life is systems.
So how, before we get to the systems, I guess we need to know how to fuel our bodies appropriately. And there's a lot of noise. There's different types of diets. We've got keto, intermittent fasting, 5-1, 5-2, you've got Herbalife, and I saw your post earlier, the Herbalife rant, which was really interesting. So how do we cut through the noise, and in your own words, how do we look awesome but also feel awesome for us everyday athletes, everyday human beings? How do we cut through the noise?
Yeah. So I don't want to oversimplify it, but you have to kind of go a bit sort of paleo, barefoot, natural for me to kind of zoom out on this picture. So let's look at the real big basics. We all know that we kind of need to eat like sleep 7 to 8 hours a night. Like everyone knows that. It's just people are bad at sort of having the sleep hygiene practices to do it every day. Like
it's that Netflix last episode of Netflix. That's what does you.
Yeah. Exactly. The little red button pops up like, oh, it won't hurt. And then you're already an hour back.
It loads it for you now. It loads it for you. You don't even have to press next episode and you're in. You go before you get out of your bed 1-2 in the morning.
So that's the first pillar, sleep. Nutrition. We can't argue that the body is going to thrive on real food. Whether you want to be vegan or vegetarian, whether you want to fast, whether you want to do whatever, real food. So make sure the lion's share of your diet is real food. Most people know about macros, protein, carbs, and fats. Have a good balance. The chances are if you eat every meal with a source of protein, whether that's vegan, vegetarian, or animal, you're going to be on top of your protein intake. And then it's up to you whether you're concerned enough about your calories or it is a concern for you to take more of a concerned or conceited approach to manage it to maintain your weight or to lose weight. So that's where we might employ some kind of portion control method. And obviously calorie count is one element of that. If you start having foods in your diet where it's having a negative effect, we talked about alcohol at the beginning of the show, check yourself. Like if you have 3 pints and the next day you feel tired, don't cut out alcohol altogether. Maybe you have 2 pints. And then if you wake up the next day and you're all right, perhaps you're like, okay, my habit was just, I was over egging it a bit. I don't need to be really rash and cut out alcohol and just scale it back a little bit so I can enjoy it, but not feel the downsides the next day. Exercise, make it flexible, purpose driven. These days I just want to be happy and healthy, like that's it. So I go for a cycle like twice a week. I do weights 2 or 3 times a week, and I just try and walk a lot, move a lot, be active, do the gardening, you know, get 10,000 steps in, that kind of thing. And that's it. But the problem is it comes back to trusting yourself as well and trusting the basics, the fundamentals, the principles. If you're listening to all the noise and not ever checking yourself, going back and going, okay, I get what this guy on Instagram is saying, but is that relevant to me? Is it relevant to my goals? Does it sound rational? You know, do I want to be vegan? Do I want to follow a keto diet? What is the science behind a keto diet? Oh, okay, only epileptics can benefit from it. Am I an epileptic? No. So why do a keto diet? Sounds restrictive. Okay, let's not do a keto diet. Let's just eat normally. So part of that is about just knowing how to block out the noise by knowing the fundamentals. Doesn't mean don't take on board new things. I'm always looking at new research, new supplements, new ways to do things, new training techniques, but that only gets let in if it passes the critical tests. Like is it robustly supported by the science? Does it seem rational? You know, let me tweak it, let me try it. Because the reality is we know 90% of what is going to keep us happy and healthy and age well. Nothing's going to come out in the research now that's going to, you know, really advance how we live longer, apart from disease, you know, combating disease, you know, curing some cancers, all that kind of stuff. Like, if you go to a blue zone, what are all the people in the blue zones doing? They're being happy, they're being healthy, they're eating a whole food diet. None of them are doing ridiculous amounts of exercise. Like, these people aren't doing flipping marathons and just breaking their body. They're just doing general exercise, like the gardening, farming, being active. These are the people that are living to 102, 107. So there's no science there. It's just real food, quite a natural approach to living.
What's quite interesting on that is what just springs to my mind. There's a new series on Netflix with Zac Efron and another health guru guy, and they're sort of traveling around the world. I don't know if you've seen it, and they've gone to the Blue Belt. They've gone to a certain place in Italy where there's these centurions that live into 100, and they've got a really high carb diet. So they've got a low protein, high carb, and they're living some crazy ages. And kind of Zac Efron's taken back, and he's like, yeah, like when I'm leaning up for shoots and stuff, and you know, I've completely cut carbs out and I've just relied on protein. But excuse me, for longevity, there's these people living to 100 saying, no, we just have like fresh pasta and high carb. But seems like carbs in the Western world has been seen as the enemy. What's your sort of thoughts on that?
Yeah, it has done. Problem is, it's people looking at nutrition mechanistically and not wholly. So the theory goes, if you eat carbs, it elevates your insulin levels, which is totally true. Insulin stores body fat, which is totally true, but it's a temporary mechanism and it's designed to do that. Like, it's a thing that has to happen in your body for it to survive. You eat food, some of it is stored, some of it is used in the digestion process, and then some of it is burnt right there and then. And it's kind of like split depending on, you know, where you're at, whether you're under eating, overeating, et cetera. But that doesn't skip calories being king. Like, these mechanistic processes don't skip that process. So if you've got a high carb diet and you're still eating less calories than you burn, you'll lose weight. Like, you know, you go to many parts of the world, especially in hot countries like Africa, the Caribbean, they've all got really high carb diets. Like, you know, I've been to Italy many, many times. Like, breakfast, you know, it might be a little bit of ham on a bit of bread and that's it. Like, that's all the protein they're having. And there's a bit of ham in the pasta in the evening, a bit of cheese on top. There's a bit of, like, you know, mozzarella with lunch. Like, they probably eat like 60 to 70 grams of protein a day. That's it. And as you say, they're living very happy, healthy lives, but they have such a moderate approach to nutrition. Nothing's excessive in any way. Everything's totally natural. Like, when a starter comes out in Italy, it's just like a little salad, little bit of this. You know, when a pasta dish comes out, it's just like a handful of pasta. It's not a fucking American size, like size your head, like pasta dish. Like, they have such a moderate approach and it's beautiful.
Matt, I can't agree with you more. I think we can overcomplicate it, and it does come down to calories in, calories out. With that in mind, huge day tomorrow for the whole of the UK. Gyms are back open. What are your thoughts around the opening tomorrow? And for me personally, I've really lost motivation with my training. The last few weeks, I'm struggling to even go out for a 5K. I've completely dipped off my training, started really well, borrowed some kit, had a bit of equipment, and I'm really eager to go back to the gym tomorrow. What advice and what changes do you feel the gym's going to have on us moving into tomorrow? Is it positive? Do we need the gyms now we've had this period and people have proven to be able to work out at home workout?
Yeah, I do think we need the gyms, because I think gyms is an amazing place to achieve a lot of goals that people have. The gym changed my life. I joined a gym at 18, fell in the hands of a great trainer. He gave me some sage advice in just a half an hour appointment, told me to read a book. I went away and read it. And 6 months later, I'd lost 5.5 stone, built a bit of muscle, felt great. And then that led me into the fitness industry. So if I hadn't joined that gym, met that trainer, I might not be here today. I've, you know, I've no idea what I would be doing and how that looks. So I think gyms are a powerful place for people to change. And I'm a big fan of environments, like your home. Your home's a powerful environment. How have you set it up? Is your bedroom conductive to a good night's sleep? Is the food in your fridge conductive to you eating well? And walking into a gym is the same. A gym can motivate you to be healthy. Just walking in the room, you're like, oh, the people, the atmosphere, everyone's, you know, lifting weights, they're sweating, they're working hard, and it brings people together. But I think the lockdown period is hopefully just seen or helped people realize that there is still alternative ways. You don't always have to go to a spin class. You don't always have to lift weights. There is just alternatives. And again, we get caught into habit loops of like going to the gym and doing our 5-3-1 program or doing our spinning class 5 days a week. And that's awesome if it's serving all of your purposes, but there is alternative ways. What will fitness look like in the future? Look, you know, so many people are being commentators. I don't think any of us really know. The consumer is going to decide. I know a lot of the major gym chains have lost about a third of their membership base. I was chatting to a friend today. Apparently, David Lloyd has lost a third of its membership base. That's freaking colossal. Like, that's huge. Like, will they be able to stay afloat as a company? Who knows? Is a gym like that a great gym? Yeah. Me and my wife are going to join a David Lloyd gym in about 6 months' time. But that's because we've got a young daughter. They offer childcare. They've got swimming. They've got tennis. Like, it's a great environment for us to go and meet like-minded families, do some fitness together, etc. So I think there'll always be a place for a gym, you know, meeting up. You know, some people do jobs they freaking hate, and actually turning up to the gym, seeing their mates just makes their day. And that's great. But I just think the lockdown's just given us a bit more perspective around fitness.
Mate, well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I need to establish some new goals. I think that a lot of people over the lockdown period, they've become like taken up running, and that seems to be everyone out running. I think that's been amazing. Do you think there's been a lot of people that have got into fitness over this lockdown period, and you've kind of got people, has the running thing been good for people? Because I'm mindful that, are they ready for that type of volume? People like, I'm going to go for a 5K every day. Do you think that the lockdown's been good for people to get into fitness?
Yeah, I do. But I think it's swung in many directions. Some people have gone the opposite way. So to be honest, it's probably been a bit of a leveler. Some have gone, some have not. Any positive behavior change is good. Like, you know, we can all sit here and say, oh, you know, should you be going out and doing a 5K every day? But for someone that never did a 5K to go and doing it every day, you know, that's more positive than not. So, you know, I don't want to be a commentator and say, oh, you know, you should look at your programming and careful of periodization. It's like, they'll get to that. At the moment, they've started by just lacing up their trainers, getting out the door and committing to a 5K every day. And I just think, again, we can get caught up in the fitness world of like, what is the ideal? And it's actually, where is that person at right now? If they're at just starting running and they've formed a great new habit, just let them crack on. Like, let them almost fail a little bit, because everyone needs to fail a little bit to learn. Everyone needs to, you know, get a bit of pain in the hip, or, you know, get a bit of bloating or whatever, to learn a bit more about the next step. But hopefully what we're saying with the previous narrative earlier is that we don't get to that point where it becomes a real problem and we're in serious pain or we're tired or whatever. So for now, I'd let people crack on, and hopefully it just starts the journey of learning and exploring, and perhaps they join a running club and then they get some great tips, and then they start wearing a better pair of trainers and, you know, whatever.
It's interesting you say that, because my girlfriend, she really didn't get on with running, had sore knees, and then she got the right pair of trainers for her. She got a pair of those On, the Swedish On running ones. They seem pretty good. She got a pair of them. She's running like 3 or 4 times a week now, loving it, just because she's got a pair of trainers and have some more time on her hands. So there's a living example of how it can only be a good thing. How has your training been during this period, and what's a typical week looking like for you at the moment?
Yeah, cycling twice a week, weights 2 or 3 times a week. And I just basically say to myself, look, there's 7 days in a week. I'm just going to try and fit it in when I feel good. And the reality is, some days, some weeks, I don't get as much sleep as I want to. So I just cut myself some slack, don't train for 2 or 3 days. And then as soon as the energy is there, I'll crack on. If I want to do some training and I don't think I've quite got the energy, I usually do cardio. When my energy is good, I'm feeling strong, I'll do weights. So that's a general rule of thumb. So
you know, if I'm feeling a bit tired, I'll be like, oh, I just go out for a cycle. And even if I do 30 or 40 minutes at a low pace, I'm happy with that because I've got out, got some blood running through the legs, got some endorphins up. But the chances are I might actually just shake it off and be actually pretty good. I just had a bit of mental fog kicking about. So actually I get out on a ride and 15 minutes in, I'm like, I feel pretty good actually. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
That's a lot harder to do with weights. I think it takes a lot more kind of like just sort of inner strength and mindset to, you know, be lifting weights hard and I'm trying to get into it. It just feels like a bit more of a grind. So sometimes I'll go for a ride and I'll be like, actually, I feel really strong. And I'll ride back home and lift some, you know, weights or whatever. So I think cardio is a good way to sometimes find out if your body's ready for a hard training session or not. And if not, just do a bit of cardio, have a little stretch and just knock it on his head. So that's my approach to training. And I just push where I can, back off where I need to, and that's it. But, you know, some people listening to that will be like, oh, I can't do that. Gives me a bit of panic that. And usually it gives people panic because their nutrition's not on lockdown. So people are scared if they don't train really hard, they're going to lose all their gains or gain body fat or whatever. Like, it takes a surprisingly small amount of training, hypothesized 1/10 of the volume that it takes to build muscle to maintain your muscle, hypothesized in the scientific literature. So really, I don't need to be training like 4 days a week lifting weights to maintain muscle. Actually, if I just lifted with good intensity, full body once a week, I'd maintain my physique. But I'm not worried about it because my nutrition's consistent. And that's where a lot of people fall down. Like, they have this panic over training less, and it's usually because their nutrition isn't on point.
Like, train harder. I mean, I can be guilty with it in the CrossFit world. It's like every session's a red line. And I'm learning myself about sitting in the green zone and going on long runs in sort of 140, 145 heart rate. And I'm feeling way better for it, man, when I'm not redlining. And people love the competition, that's fine. But I think we can fall into the trap of like looking on Instagram, everyone's training hard, everyone's competing every day. And it, for me, it just goes back to balance, man. Like, that's where I'm at. And it sounds like we're pretty aligned there.
100%. Takes confidence and time to do that. Don't get me wrong. But then that can be the value of a coach. A coach just sitting you down and being like, hey, whoa, just go out for a run, 30 minutes, 140 beats per minute heart rate, and just enjoy it. Like, just, you know, feel, get the breath in your lungs. Honestly, I reckon most everyday people that don't have the time to really get on top of their recovery can probably redline comfortably about twice a week. I can't really do more than about twice a week. I mean, like, balls to the wall, like you're fucking like feeling like you want to puke.
Yeah.
You know, people that are doing this every day, I usually find they're quite chronically fatigued. Like, if I sit them down and actually delve into how they're feeling every day, they are needing a lot of caffeine. Like, they're running on adrenaline all the time. They're people that are constantly on the go. Mm. And I can tell this all the time. And CrossFit is the perfect example. Whenever I've given a seminar in a CrossFit gym, and let's say I've got 40 faces in front of me watching me speak, I know that if I stop talking for about 5 minutes, about 30 to 40% of the audience would fall asleep because they're that fatigued. Wow. They're running on adrenaline. They're the type of people that always are redlining in their training, always pushing their body. So they're constantly running on adrenaline. They're like these do people. I'm like, that's not a good place to be in. Like, you're constantly like that. And don't get me wrong, people are pushing for performance. They want to be really fit. But I think there's a middle ground. And I always say to people, look, sometimes you've got to make sacrifices for high performance out of your body. Like, you're going to be tired sometimes. And that's where we peak in our training. We overreach, to coin a strength and conditioning term. But if you're getting up for work the next day and you're tired because you redlined last week at CrossFit, and that's last night at CrossFit, and that's repeatedly happening, fitness is now potentially having more downsides to your overall life than upsides. Mm. So we need to balance and get all these upsides. And that's why I only train hard like 2-3 times a week, because I know if I do more, I'm going to wake up on Thursday and Friday just knackered. And I'm self-employed. Like, I can't afford to be knackered trying to
running
do my
a
job
as well. Yeah. You're not a full-time athlete.
And then have the variable stress of, you know, my daughter being up half the night or that kind of thing. So there's a lot to be said for the middle ground.
What I'd like to pick your brain on a little bit as well is, I know you close to Fergus Crawley. You've had him on your podcast. Great guy. I know him as well. he's training in an interesting way. And I've seen this come up recently. I've seen it on the social media, kind of training in two extremities, kind of the longer endurance side of stuff, and then the strength side of things. I see there's this challenge going on of like, I think it's a 500-pound squat and a 5-minute mile. What's your thought on training the body in like two polar opposite extremities? Is there an increase in that kind of as a discipline and sport? It's kind of outside the CrossFit world, but it's pushing the boundaries from those two spectrums.
Yeah, as a general observation, I think it's a very positive thing for fitness because people are seeing that you don't just have to be a power lifter or an X. Like you can be a multi-sport athlete or multi-ability athlete. According to the research, as long as you train on separate days, so run one day, lift weights the next day, you can be perfectly adaptable and progress very well. It all is going to hinge on your ability to recover from that volume and apply enough volume and pressure and over sort of, you know, progression to actually get to a 5-minute mile, to get to a 500-pound deadlift. So if you're a busy mum of two with a full-time job and you want to try and run a 5-minute whatever and lift a, you might struggle because your lifestyle isn't going to allow you to achieve that goal. But if you're Fergus, you know, you haven't got any kids, you know, you've got a missus, you've got a job, actually you can train pretty hard every day. You do get to bed on time. You eat really well. You're in the mountains at the weekend. You're swimming in the lake. You're doing all this cool stuff. Then actually you've got the perfect recipe to kind of push the body and recover from it. And he's intelligently programming, like his mindset's really fresh for it. He's up for it. So I think it's a good thing. Just know if it's right for you and know if you can recover from it. Like right now, I couldn't chase a goal like that. It would absolutely snap me in two.
Yeah. He's a beast, man. Like he's strong, he's fit. And just staying on sort of the subject of, I know you had Fergus on your podcast, transitioning slightly onto sort of the mental health and mindset side of things. You've posted a bit about mental health. I'm particularly interested in men's mental health. I'm a co-founder of a charity called Talk Club. And I noticed earlier when you were struggling not long ago, sort of 5-6 weeks ago, you had the courage to sort of show vulnerability, pump the brakes and look after yourself and take a rest for you. And that's hard for anyone, particularly us as men, who can be very proud. And I'd like to kind of understand what you feel it means to be a man today and a modern man in society. What does that mean to you?
Oof, big question. So, I mean, I don't want to mince my words in terms of gender because many of the words that I would probably use to describe how I want to turn up in my life, many females would probably use the same kind of term. So I'm going to kind of scale that back and just say, what kind of person do I want to be? Because I don't want to put my foot in it in any way. And
appreciate
really,
that.
I want everyone to define, regardless of gender, whatever, how they want to turn up. So as a modern man in my life, I want to be a strong kind of figure, leader, emotionally to my wife, to my daughter, to my team. I want to care for them. I want to have time for them. I want to be vulnerable, but I also want to stand by my principles. I want to be a good communicator. I want to be compassionate. I want to be supportive. I want to be a visionary. I want to lead, you know, my relationship, my business, everything with vision, with strength. But I also want to have fun. I want to have adventure. I want to know when to relax. So, you know, being a modern man, being a modern person, like I think men and women can just learn so much from each other. Like women have been telling men for years, talk more. Tell me what you're thinking. Tell me what you're feeling. And men have just been like, ooh, ooh, ooh. Well, that's not helping anyone. So regardless of sex, it doesn't help if you don't talk effectively, if you're not vulnerable to each other, if you don't tell each other what you mean, what you're actually feeling, what you want from life. And that is the crux of so much crap between people, businesses, everything. It's just communication. Like you'll be amazed at what happens in life when you're just honest. And there's nothing wrong with you saying, I don't want to do that, or I feel this way, or you've upset me, because that then leads to an outcome. So yeah, I kind of skirted around your question, but I kind of didn't like the framing of the question with how people almost try and get you to identify where a gender or a makeup of skills
I can understand that. And you articulated the answer very well, Ben. So thank you. I think there's a lot that could be taken away for how to be a better human. And I like that answer a lot. I just picked up on the last bit you said then about saying no. Like, have you got better at saying no? Is that a skill?
Way better. Yeah, it's a skill when you are really clear on what it is that you do want. And that's the thing. Like, so for example, building a business is a great example. When you're building a business, you just hustle all over. You're networking, you're doing marketing, you're building, you're doing systems, you're doing website, you hustle. So you don't know what opportunity is going to lead to the upside. So you just say yes, and you run with it. You just try and run as fast as you can. And when you get further down the line and you're like, no, actually, this is how I need to spend my time. I need to be doing it on sales or, you know, marketing or customer support, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You need to define how you best spend your time. So then you have to kind of be reflective. Again, it's like working in. If you keep saying yes to things and you keep getting caught in the same pattern, which is working 12 hours when you promise yourself you're only going to work 8 hours, it might be because last week you said yes to X, Y, and Z, when really you should have said no to X, Y, and Z so you can focus on what you really need to do and only work 8 hours that week. You know, and it's the same with like family and stuff. It's like knowing when you have your limits. Like if, you know, we had some family members were like, oh, can we come over and meet Ivy? And we were just like, no. Like, honestly, we're just burnt out. And I know it feels bad to say no to your family who want to come and like spend some time with your daughter. We couldn't handle it emotionally and mentally. Like we'd already had like 3 people over that week. And it was just like, no, it's too much. Because we've got quite a big broken family, me and my wife, because both sides have divorced. So it's like spider of family.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, parents, eh? Fuck. Anyway.
What was that book I saw on your profile? About the parents. Was it Parents They Fuck You Up?
Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read.
Okay, give us a quick synopsis. Break it down quickly.
Perry. So this book is amazing. I recommend it to every single parent. And it basically goes through, in quite a broad view, your child's development. And it kind of calls on your own experiences as a child with your parents' relationship. And then starts to say, well, how do you want to turn up as a parent? And it was really good. It reflected a lot on how your child sees the world. It calls upon you to be very honest with your child. A lot of parents are actually very dishonest with their children, even in very lighthearted ways. So she uses examples all the time where she's like, this is how a thing happened, a scenario happened. And this is how I recommend you could play that example out and how the outcome would be different. So she used a lot of real world examples. And it's just a superb book. I genuinely think every parent has to read it. And it's quite a easy read, probably take, well, okay, it's not too big a book, wouldn't take too long, but it's really got me into the psychology of parenting and behavior. And I'm now reading a really deep, geeky book by some guy with a massive PhD. And it's a huge book. It's really sciencey, but I really value how the mind works, how we communicate, how we behave. I think it underpins so much of what is a struggle for a lot of people. And I want to be the best dad humanly possible. And I know that starts with me.
Yeah. And I think for me, I had a difficult upbringing, and I want to like break the cycle. And I think it's important to read things like that and not necessarily pass down potential traumas through generations. I think it's important to, like you said, self-introspection, understanding why you are, maybe who you are as a byproduct of your parents or your childhood experiences. I think there's a lot locked in there in that area of like potentially childhood trauma, that kind of thing. But going back and unpicking that, I think is quite helpful for people. So I'll pop that in the show notes. Any other books, podcasts you're feeling at the moment?
Books. I've just, what have I been reading? I've been reading a lot of philosophical business books, mainly because I work with a therapist. I have a session sort of every 2 or 3 weeks with her. And the remit of my therapist is to help me to become a better person. That's it. So I didn't go to her with like a specific problem. I wasn't in pain. I wasn't suffering when I went to her. I just knew that being a dad, being a business owner, being someone that a lot of people look to for advice, and being someone that wants to live their best life, I thought nothing bad is going to happen from getting a therapist. Only good things can happen by me understanding myself. And I'm a very self-aware person. I think I've done a lot of work on myself. I've got a very strong mindset. I don't want that to stop. I have a hunger for self-improvement, but I want to do it in quite a kind of more gentle and compassionate way now. I don't want to be this real aggressive growth person, which I was when I was younger, because I can't handle the pace. You know, I used to read like a book a week when I was younger. I haven't got time to read a book a week now. I haven't got the time to implement the shit that I'm going to read from a book a week. So my therapist has just been chatting to me like, you know, I want you to slow down a little bit. I want you to be closer to your emotions, because you're actually very resilient, but actually I think you shield yourself from some of your true emotions sometimes, which is one of the reasons I burnt out, because I wasn't being honest with myself that I was actually struggling a bit. I was just being the sort of brave soldier to everyone. So my advice would be, rather than me isolating books for people, just ask yourself, listening to this, what chord have we struck today? And say, right, I'm struggling with X. And then go and find literally the top 5 rated books on that topic and go and order a couple of them. And that's what I say in terms of personal development, when you're not sure of the solution. Like, I speak to so many people every day that are struggling with their mindset. And I'm like, how many books have you read on mindset? Oh, none. I'm like, what do you think would happen if you went and read 5? And they sort of pause, and you can see, and they're like, yeah, this is on me. I'm like, but you haven't even taken that step of going, I've got a problem. Why don't I go and seek the wisdom of all these incredible people who've been through these challenges and go and read a book on it? Like Carol Dweck's book, Mindset. Incredible. Extreme Ownership was just kind of really a mindset.
Jocko Willink.
Incredible book. Like, you know, there's so many amazing books on mindset. Like, if you don't know the answer to the problem, just throw knowledge at it. Literally, listen to podcasts on mindset. Read books on mindset. Like, if you want to become rich, go and read 10 books on becoming rich. You'll probably have worked it out. That's the beautiful thing that we've got in this world. Like, all the knowledge is there, but you have to take action on the knowledge. And sometimes we spend too much time like in the pain, in the emotion of the problem. It's like, stand back, be logical, understand what you're feeling, become at one with it. Don't try and change it. And that's another problem. People try and change how they're feeling. Don't change it. Become at one with it, and then say, right, now I'm going to find the knowledge that will help me process this better. I was reading a little passage from a book on stoicism, which is another passion topic of mine.
I've got the Daily Stoic. I've got that down there.
Great book. Stoic.
Yeah. Every day, a little great wisdom.
Book. Yeah. And it was talking about stress, and it was just saying, look, stress is there for everyone. There you go. It's on your windowsill. Boom. Stress is there for everyone. Pressure is there for everyone. Some people have got it more. Some people have got it less. How do you become more resilient at dealing with that stress? Well, you develop. You develop those skills. You develop perspective. You develop coping mechanisms. And that's why I'm so passionate about talking about the mind and mental health, as are you, because it's literally the best skill. Like I said to my therapist, I know how to navigate my future when I know myself better. So business decisions, opportunities, what I might navigate with my wife or my child, I know that I will navigate all of that better if I know my true north better. And that was my remit with her. And it's been great. And there's days I turn up and I'm like, not sure we've got anything to talk about today, almost. And I kind of felt like that yesterday. And at the end of the call, I was like, thank you. Awesome.
Mate, thank you so much for sharing that. It's almost like a gym membership for the mind. Like there should be no shame. There's such a stigma attached with therapy. Like I've been on and off therapy for the last 10 years. It's helped me tremendously. And if more people can have the courage like you to share that on this podcast, I really think it's going to help a lot of people to just be a bit vulnerable, because I think there is strength in vulnerability. And mate, thanks so much for sharing that. I think we're kind of now transitioning towards the end of the podcast. And I want to finish up with 3 questions. which I usually ask at the end of each podcast. The first one is, what scares you?
So without any preparation, that's an interesting question, and it's something that I've been exploring with my therapist as well, because I'll tell a very quick story. With all this extreme exercise and the fitness industry and this kind of pressure to kind of develop yourself, and I see all these people around me go in, and I've interviewed, you know, loads of these people where they're like, oh, you know, you'll find yourself where you do these extreme challenges. And I've always thought to myself, well, what would happen if I went and trekked the Sahara, or, you know, cycled around Scotland, or swam around the UK like Ross Edgley did, and all these mad things? And I've always just sat there and thought, I don't get why I would do that. Like, I honestly don't know what I'm looking for. When people say, oh, you know, you find a greater level of yourself, I'm like, I just don't get it. It just sounds really freaking stressful having to do all that training.
People want to do Ironman as well as a big. Yeah.
So I am, through an influence of one of my team members, I entered the SAS Who Dares Wins TV program. And I posted it periodically on my Instagram story. I didn't make much of it. But anyway, started to have and do the training for it. And I'm not a very good runner, and I was kind of failing at the running. I'm falling short a bit. And then I pulled my calf, and I was like, okay, that's a bit of a bummer. And then I went to do a practice run again like a week later, and I pulled my calf again. And then I was honest with myself, and I was like, I'm actually finding this stressful. Like, I want to do the experience of the TV program. Mm-hmm. I think it would be fun. I think it would be a, but actually I'm not actually looking to find anything there. Like, people go into these programs and they're like, oh, you know, I want to find myself. I want to break myself down and build myself up. Like, I genuinely don't think that way. And sort of coming back to this thing that scares me, it's almost like we go hunting for things that do scare us sometimes. And we haven't really sat down and thought, well, is anything like scary about that? Like, am I actually looking for something? I think a lot of people would say, oh, I'm like scared of failure. Really? Are you? Bullshit. I'm going to call that. Like, am I scared of failure? Well, everyone's scared of failure, but I'm failing every day. Fuck. I'm failing as a dad every day. But luckily, 80, 90% of what I do as a dad is pretty decent. I'm learning every time to get it right. But there's many failures all the time in my life. So am I scared of failure? Yeah, to an extent. But like, that's how we grow. Am I scared of a really big failure? Yeah, but I trust myself. I think I've had enough really big failures to kind of hopefully not get it right anymore. So what scares me? If I was to pinpoint anything, it's probably dying and not having gone all in throughout my life. Did a podcast the other day where I spoke about, people often ask you, like, if you were to talk to your younger self, what advice would you give? And I'm like, the same advice, because I would do things now differently in retrospect, in hindsight. That's kind of unfair on yourself, because we always learn more with age, with wisdom. But actually, I stood there and went, from the age of 18, with what I knew at the time, I went all in on my life. I did it all. I traveled. I went out and drunk. I started a business. I went to uni. I just did everything. I went all in. I didn't sit still. So for me to say, oh, would I change anything? Yeah, of course I would change anything. But actually, I wouldn't change the commitment to myself, which is I just went all in. And I think that's all people can do. Like, if you're listening to this podcast right now, and you can't put your hand on your heart and say, am I going all in on life? Am I all in on being a dad, on whatever my career is, on looking after myself, on being fit? Am I all in? No. Well, go and have a chat with yourself in the mirror and decide how you're going to get all in.
Whew, fired up. I'm ready to go have that conversation right now. Mate, that was awesome. Thanks for that.
Sorry, I keep skirting around your questions.
No, this is, you're hitting me. It's going deep, man. I'm loving it. The penultimate kind of question I want to tease out of you is, tell me something that you've recently changed your mind about.
Oh, man. You should give some prep. Honestly, I probably my want and desire to perform and achieve some of the goals I had in my youth. So like goal setting can quite often be accumulative. Like we're always setting fitness goals, and then we set a career goal, and then we set a health goal, and then we set a relationship goal. And it's like, I've just been honest with myself and been like, I've changed my mind that that is not a goal for me. Like it's not my, in my true north. So while I still want to be fit and healthy, I don't want to actually push myself. So I thought I did, but actually I've stressed myself in that area and it stressed me out. So I've kind of changed my mind that that's not a goal. So that's probably the only thing that I can sort of think that I've changed my mind on at the moment is what my goals actually are.
With age, like I'm learning as well about that North Star. And it's like what you said earlier with saying no. It's like what, it's like that GB quote, what makes the boat go faster? And I don't know if you heard about that before. Like, how do you get where you want to go? Like, how do you make that boat the lightest way? And they used to say it in the GB team, in the Olympic rowing team, what makes the boat go faster? And I link it to something that I've read on Greg McKeon's book, Essentialism. It's like, what is your highest point of contribution? Like, that's that true North Star. And everything else, you know, can you get better at saying no to things that do not make the boat go faster and do not bring you to your North Star? And of course you may pivot, but I'm just getting so much better at just trying to stick to that North Star and not get pulled in different, being a generalist in everything and knowing a little bit about everything and not a lot about something. It's something that I'm pondering a lot at the moment. I've changed my mind on is less but better.
Mm. Yeah, because it quite often leads to a richer experience of what it is that you choose to do. And, you know, part of that is we get caught up in all the things that we're following and the people we're comparing ourselves to. And I used to get, you know, I'm probably now just about out of it, but it took me a while to get out of comparing myself to peers in the industry, especially when peers have used me as like maybe a benchmark of something. So I've, you know, been through many ups and downs with peers in the industry that have done similar things, competitors, that kind of stuff. And I kind of check myself and sort of, you know, compare myself against them. And it's like, well, actually that's only causing me stress. Like I can only do what I can do in my best way possible. As long as I turn up in my best way as a coach, as a speaker, as a whatever, then I'll do well. Like stop getting caught up in what they're doing, because what they're doing is serving them. So serve me and serve the people that I can. And that's kind of good enough. And again, I think journaling on that kind of stuff can really help to sort of put that kind of thing to bed.
Boom. I love it. Last but not least, tell us a particular guilty pleasure or hobby that we may not know about you or others may not know about you.
Probably upcycling and tinkering with like furniture and decorating.
Cool. Yeah.
Like if I see a nice like kitchen unit, what do they call it? Anyway, just like think of a nice bit of furniture. And if I see it on Facebay, I'm like, ooh, I should get that. And I'm going to paint it this and I'm going to put that on it. And like, so I love tinkering, like I'll call it soft art. I'm not an artist, because if you told me to paint something, you would get something that doesn't look like anything. But in terms of like detail and design and stuff, I quite enjoy that.
Cool.
But yeah, not many people know that.
That's pretty cool. Do you keep it for yourself or sell it on? Is there a bit of business in here?
No, I wouldn't make any money because I'd spend so much time.
Would you devalue it further?
I'm not that bad. We usually do it like in the house. So at the moment we're looking at like a wooden ottoman for our kitchen diner. And again, I'm looking at an upcycle project on Facebay, and I'll probably spend, you know, a weekend, you know, a couple of times and make that nice. And yeah.
That's cool, man. All right. The last two things I need for you, and it's a staple on every single episode. I run a playlist on Spotify, Get a Grip Music, and I always ask for a fire up track and a chill out track. The fire up is going to get the shoes on, go for a run, going to go for a PB, we're getting lit. What's fire up? And then chill out, like bedtime, maybe Sunday, you know, light a few candles. What's the fire up? What's the chill out, man?
So the chill out is probably something that I'm listening to with Ivy a lot on our morning walk. And that's Jack Johnson, Better Together.
Oh, that's a tune. Haven't heard in ages.
We have a little bounce around, little chat. In terms of a fire up, probably Wilkinson, who's a drum and bass DJ. Maybe something, maybe a track like All For You.
Okay, man, we'll get it on the playlist. It's a way of me connecting with the guests and people to just draw for a fire up or a chill out when they feel like it. Everyone's winning.
There you go.
Ben, you've been an absolute gent. Thank you for being so open and honest. I certainly got a lot from that, and I hope the listeners do too. I know you're a busy man, so I'll let you get on.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. If anyone wants to reach out after the show, then I'm Ben Coomber all over the internet. So just holler and
just Google at him.
At me. DM. Slip in. Slip into the DMs.
Cool. Cheers, Ben.